Well, this year is the 450th anniversary of the closing of the Council of Trent. And it's worth reflecting on and celebrating the Council of Trent a bit. It is one of the most important councils in the history of the church, also the longest council by far. It commenced in December of 1545 and didn't end until 1563. And there were several hiatuses in between, but it was a very protracted council. It took place in Trent, of course, but other cities as well, as they moved around out of fear of disease and fear of Protestant armies, et cetera, et cetera. So a very dramatic time. It was, of course, in response to the Protestant Reformation. How to respond to the criticisms of Luther, Calvin, and the other reformers. One of the tragedies is, frankly, that it took so long to come together. So Luther, it's in 1517 that he puts the 95 Theses up on the church door in Wittenberg. 1520, the Reformation is well underway. If the Council of Trent had happened, let's say, in 1525, would that have made more of a difference? If Luther, let's say, had been at the Council of Trent, would that have made a difference? One of the ironies, too, is that Luther himself died during the first session of the Council of Trent in the spring of 1546. Anyway, you know, when I was coming of age in the years after Vatican II, Trent was sort of the bad boy council. So Vatican II is, you know, the cool council that's open to the modern world and progressive and all that. And the bad boy council was not so much Vatican I, but Trent. If you were old-fashioned conservative, you know, you were stuck in the time of Trent. A famous joke from the council period is that Cardinal Ottaviani, who was a leading sort of conservative figure at Vatican II, that he came out of his apartment and he got a cab and said, quick, take me to the council. And the cab driver drove him to Trent, you know. So that was the joke, that Tridentine people were stuck in the old times. So I had those prejudices deep in my system. When I read Trent for the first time in connection with a course I was teaching out here at the seminary on the Reformation, and I must say, when I read Trent, I was so impressed by it. Some of the smartest people at the time got together and composed these texts, and they had listened very carefully to the Protestant reformers. It is completely a caricature to say that the church kind of lurched away from the Reformation. It uncritically reacted to Luther. That is not the case at all. The people that wrote the Tridentine documents read the reformers very carefully. And I would say, it's probably surprising to us now, they nodded rather vigorously toward them in many ways, even as they also pulled back and clarified. So I would say, really, anyone listening to this video, but especially Catholics, I would say, take the time to read the Council of Trent, the documents. They really are extraordinary. I'll just focus on two simple things. There's a lot we could say about it. But to their credit, the Tridentine Fathers decided, look, let's take the central issue of the Reformation first. Let's address that first. Some people said, hey, no, let's do some practical things first, and we'll slowly get to the really, you know, hot-button issues. And they said, no, let's look at the serious issues. What were they? Above all, original sin and justification, the two issues that Luther's critique sort of hinged on. Original sin. The Tridentine Fathers, and again, it's probably surprising to us today how vigorously they nod toward the reformers' sense of total depravity. Now, I want to be careful. They pull back from a total depravity view of human beings, but they pretty clearly indicate that original sin has severely wounded the human being, the human community, and the human project. See, we have inherited, as moderns and now postmoderns, a very strong sense of perfectibility. Think of the myth of progress in the 19th century. You know, through our science and through our political achievements and through our maturity as a race, we will solve all the great human problems. Thinking especially the way the sciences have affected us here, we have an extraordinary confidence in our ability to perfect ourselves. Well, you know, as every postmodern points out, look at the 20th century sometime and ask yourself the question, are these, you know, perfectible agents working here? Karl Bard and company, who very early on in the 20th century said no to this, you know, myth of progress. Well, see, Trent stands very clearly with the mainstream of the Christian tradition against all schemas of perfectibility. Now, why? Because it knows that original sin has compromised us in this very serious way. Trent says that original sin has led to a loss of holiness and a loss of justice. Very interesting. Holiness. Wholeness, right? In almost all the great European languages, healthy and holy are closely related. You know, saint and saint in French, heilig and heil in German, and so on. To be holy is to be whole, is to be integrated. That everything in me hangs together around the proper center, which is the love of God, right? What has sin done to us? The loss of a proper relationship to God has led to a disintegration of the self. I mean, I've read all the psychologists and philosophers and all that. I don't know any better description of what's wrong with us than that. You lose the relation to God, and the rest of you disintegrates. Mind, will, passions, emotions, sexuality, body, public life, private life are now a jumble. They're now opposed to each other. We've disintegrated. The technical term for that is we've lost holiness. We've fallen apart. Now, and again, I think anyone who's lived more than, you know, 15 years on planet Earth can witness to what that feels like, that I'm disintegrated. Trent sees that quite properly as a fruit of original sin. Secondly, we've lost justice. What's justice but right relationship? See, first of all, a right relationship to God. Once that's compromised, well, I fall apart on the inside, quite right. I also fall apart on the outside, meaning all my relationships, my friendships, my business relationships, my political relationships, all become skewed and kinky and compromised. I've lost holiness. I've lost justice. More to it, Trent says, this original sin is passed on propagazione et non imitazione, by propagation and not by imitation. It's a very profound insight, seems to me. Sin is passed on not simply by the process of imitation. Like, oh, look at that. That looks interesting. I'll try that myself. It's much more like the way a disease is passed on, where it invades our systems. Think now how sin, this loss of holiness and justice, will work its way into our, even our biology, if you want, into the structures of our brains, and also into our institutions, also into all the structures of society. This has led to the human race being one big dysfunctional family. I think the best comparison now is to forms of addiction. If someone's addicted to alcohol, well, they're not going to will themselves out of it, right? They can't lift themselves up out of alcoholism. There's an acknowledgement of a profound dysfunction that needs to be addressed by a higher power, right? That's commonplace now in the 12-step systems. That's very close to what Trent's saying about sin. It's a disease that has affected the whole human family. We're all in the same boat, and we're all seasick, is how Chesterton summed that up. I think Trent here, as I say, is very vigorously nodding toward the reformers, is taking very seriously their stress upon what sin has done to us. Now, what follows from this view, now of the second great issue I want to talk about, namely justification. As you know, that was the neuralgic point of the Reformation, because Luther made it central to his teaching that we are justified, set right with God, by grace through faith. It's by faith alone. When I accept in faith the grace offered to me, I am justified, apart from works of the law, right? So there's a central Lutheran claim, and the Reformation in many ways flows from that. What does the Catholic Church say about this? Well, Trent's doctrine on justification now is worth careful study. First insight, do we need a higher power to save us? Yes, and here Trent is clearly nodding toward Luther, approvingly. It disputes any program of perfectibility, whether it's classical philosophy or modern philosophy. We can't save ourselves. No alcoholic can make himself not to be an alcoholic. If sin is like an addiction or dysfunction, it's only by a higher power addressing us that we can be saved. And that's why, see, we need a savior, not just a teacher. Jesus is not just someone that teaches us nice moral truths that now we can imitate. He's a savior who has to go into our dysfunction and set it right. Trent here is clearly acknowledging the primacy and necessity of grace. I think it's saying to Luther, you were right about that. You were reflecting the mainstream of the great Christian tradition. So where's it pull back from Luther? Luther had taught a version of total depravity. He also taught a version of forensic or imputed righteousness. That means we're not really made righteous by grace. We are declared righteous. God imputes, as it were, righteousness to us. See, Trent balks at that. The Catholic Church has always balked at that. Because we hold to a real transformation. That yes, we are compromised dramatically by sin. Yes, we need a Savior. Can't save ourselves. But that grace, now, having invaded our lives, can be cooperated with. So here's now what remains integral of human freedom and human intelligence and human goodwill can cooperate with grace so that the divine life can grow in us and become perfected in us. That's why Trent talks about justification, which happens through faith and grace alone, quite right. You can't do it on your own. But then it speaks of an increase in justification, which can happen through our cooperation. And in this we get, if you want, the Catholic difference. But see, what I think is interesting is, for most people today, I think what would surprise them most about Trent is how vigorously it acknowledges the Reformers, how seriously it takes original sin, the necessity of grace. The difference, though, is the capacity to cooperate with the energy of grace so as to grow in justification. Anyway, there's a lot more I could say about Trent. It's a beautifully crafted, beautifully written set of documents. It was a key moment in the life of the Church, and I think it's very important, especially for Catholics now, to revisit this great council on its 450th anniversary.